This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since the colour blue. And you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to Edwina Jenner, health coach and personal trainer for women. Along with teaching women to lift weights safely, she's also run a 28-day menopause reset program where women increase their energy levels, reduce their weight, and learn to manage stress more effectively. Welcome to the show, Edwina. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, Gavin. Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. Edwina, tell us a bit about your background. You can go back how many years, I don't mind, and tell us about how you got to where you are now, because you do quite a few things.
I do. I probably always had a focus on health, Gavin. So I trained to become, I was a stay-at-home mum for a long time, and then I retrained to become a personal trainer when I was about 40. Because I'd always had an interest in fitness and women had always sort of asked me about fitness. So it was a good time. So I retrained as a personal trainer and I got involved in weights, basically weight training. So I'd always been very much into cardiovascular fitness, like running and, you know, just being on the treadmill and out and about. But I realised that I didn't want to, I thought the impact of running on my body was going to be too hard as I got older. So I got very interested in weight training and I wanted to learn how to build muscle, but I also didn't have that kind of preconceived idea about women being big and muscular, and I didn't particularly like that look. But in any case, I retrained to become a personal trainer and I set up my own personal studio and I got busy very quickly, and I generally just had a focus on training women that were in my age group, so sort of 40s and probably early 50s. So I did that. I did that for a few years and that went really well. And then I started to get an interest in menopause for the simple fact that I started to go through perimenopause myself, which is very common in your mid-40s. So I suppose there's sort of been a sequence of, you know, becoming a trainer when I was training, getting involved in menopause when I was going through menopause, and also just that was reflecting very much what my clients were going through at the time as well. So it was kind of like that couple of them, or a few of them were a little bit older than me, but they're just, I started to hear a lot more about menopause and the symptoms. And so I could see what was coming and I wanted to be able to educate myself about what was coming as well as educate my clients as well. So yeah, it was very much a sequence of events that happened, but always an interest around health and, you know, keeping my body strong and in the best shape I could.
I mean, that's fantastic. I speak to quite a few people, as you can probably imagine, on the show, and I hear people, they start to do something later on in life, you know, in their 40s and 50s, 60s. And I think that's brilliant. I think I have a lot of respect for people that can do that because, you know, you're halfway, you know, you're midlife or whatever, and you're changing your subject now. You're learning to do something different. What was that like? Did you just take it on board and because it's such an interest, you just found it easy, or were there any challenges?
I think it was challenging that I'd been out of the workplace for a while, and then all of a sudden I sort of went back to the, you know, exam room, which is a bit daunting having not done it for 20 odd years, and then setting up your own studio. So that was daunting, but it was something that I was really passionate about. And, you know, you've probably heard that saying when they say, you know, when you're passionate about something, you never work a day in your life. And I genuinely believe that. You know, I don't, maybe that's how you feel about radio, I don't know, but it's like for me in fitness, it's I love training myself, I like teaching women to train, I like to, you know, I think there's a real place for CV cardiovascular fitness, but I just think weights are so important, particularly as we age, and we'll probably get into that more, you know, strengthening or increasing our bone density and just being strong, that really appealed to me. So in terms of coming into a career that I was really passionate about later in life, I feel very fortunate that I found something that I felt really drawn to and really aligned to. And yeah, I love it. I mean, it's just great. It's a really great career.
Fantastic stuff. So tell us, how aware are women of the effects of perimenopause and menopause?
I think it's a really interesting question. I think, what do I think? So going back a few years, I think it's certainly become a lot more in the narrative. You know, Davina McCall did the menopause show quite recently in the last few months, and that's had a huge impact. And I think prior to that, there was kind of like the interest was sort of getting much bigger. So I think it's probably more 60-40. So I think, you know, women come in going, they're aware they're probably in perimenopause and they've got options of like HRT available. And then there's other women that are more like, oh, something's a bit off, but I don't know what it is and I'm fine. And I think women also tend to, you know, wait until things probably get quite bad before they do something about it. So I think it's in the vernacular a lot more than it has been. But I still think there's quite a long way to go. And I suppose, I'm probably still genuinely quite surprised when I do have a woman that, you know, a new client quite recently who hadn't really heard about any of the effects of perimenopause, and, you know, she was feeling pretty tired and pretty strung out at the time. So, I'd say it's 60-40, but I still think there's a lot of work to be done. And, you know, it's happening. It is happening. And it's great that we've got a lot more information out there now.
What are some of the actual effects, the symptoms? I know you've mentioned tiredness. Is there anything else where, you know, which the ladies experience when they're going through perimenopause or the menopause?
So there's, I think the list is about the actual sort of correct NICE guidelines. This is about 30 symptoms. But, you know, the fact is the decline of estrogen affects every cell of our body. So, you know, you are looking at cognitive function, you know, memory, you're looking at, you know, your emotional regulation, you're looking at tiredness, you're looking at learning memory, you're looking at the hot flushes, you are looking at hunger dysregulation, joint pain. It's just the list is quite long in terms of, yeah, the effects of declining estrogen. And I would say, you know, weight gain as well. I mean, it affects every area of a woman's body.
Basically, 30 and everything you've just mentioned, do you know what comes to my mind? Do you think it affects people? Do you think ladies possibly change in terms of character or personality moving forwards? And I suppose maybe from your own experiences or people that you've known, have they had maybe changed in their character? Because that's quite a number of symptoms, isn't it?
It's a huge number of symptoms. And that's not to say that women will get every one of those symptoms. You might get, you know, a woman that gets one of those symptoms. You might get a woman that gets 15 of the symptoms. It's very much, you know, genetic and, you know, what you're predisposed to. But, the fact of the matter is that we have this huge decline in estrogen because we're no longer producing eggs, and it affects, as I said, you know, just about every cell of our body. And we do have, you know, the benefits of HRT available to us, so hormone replacement therapy. So women can go to their GP and look to get the rebalance of that estrogen. And quite often when women do go on HRT, they do come in saying, I can't believe how much I didn't feel like myself. So it's like initially, so you get so used to being tired, you get so used to the forgetfulness, you get so used to the brain fog, you get used to the sugar cravings, you just get used to it. You put it down to stress, you put it down to all the external factors, probably too much work, stress at home, age, you know, maybe looking after aging parents. And then there's always this last piece of the puzzle of like, oh, maybe it's my hormones. And then when you go, and, you know, if you go to your GP and you get HRT, and then after a week of HRT and having your estrogen, as I said, rebalance, it's like, I can't believe how bad I felt, how tired I was, how stressed I was. It's quite a revelation, actually. So, yeah, in terms of not feeling like yourself, I mean, I know from my own personal experience, I was 44, yeah, about 44, and I my emotional regulation was just all over the place, just really teary. My sleep went, like, disappeared, just went through the floor. And it's that, it's that thing, it's very hard to pinpoint where it's like you're getting on with your day, but you're just not quite yourself. And you're not coping with life as well as you used to. Things that once upon a time didn't rattle you are now really derailing you, and so you find other coping mechanisms. And so, you know, that's when we probably talk a bit later on about, you know, having a glass of wine every night or looking for sugary snacks. You know, you're looking for comfort, you're looking for distraction because you just don't feel like yourself. But in actual fact, it is this decline in estrogen that really is having such an impact on every area of your life.
It sounds like it has a massive effect on confidence. I mean, it must be absolutely insurmountable, like the amount of confidence that someone loses when they're going through those kind of motions and symptoms and that kind of thing. Do you find yourself with your clients talking about that aspect as well?
Yeah, I do. And I think it does go down to that sort of just not coping. I think it does knock your confidence as well. And I think as well, if you don't know what's going on, then that's even more scary. Because you then start to worry about, I mean, particularly that brain fog and that memory loss, you know, that's really scary stuff, because then you start leaping to things like, oh, my God, is that early dementia or is that Alzheimer's? You know, and you really start to question yourself, and it's like, you know, I'm sure I just did that, or, you know, walking into a room and not knowing why you're there, or things like, and it can be comedic on one hand. Sometimes you have to laugh, but, I mean, I have stood in a car park and had no idea where my car is. And it's like you go, oh, is that just a, yeah? But then on the third time you've done that, you go, that's a bit of a problem. That's like a serious, you know, and that's what that's the sort of brain fog that I'm talking about. And then if you couple that with the struggling to sleep, which, you know, perimenopause can have a huge knock-on effect of, you know, you're struggling, you're not getting really deep quality sleep, then you're not coping with stress very well. And then if you're not coping with stress very well, then you're probably heading to sugary snacks to cope with being tired at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Then you're going to weight gain. And then all of a sudden you're in a cycle of, you know, no sleep, stress, sugar, no sleep, stress, sugar, and on it goes. And it's, you know, it's difficult. So, yeah, perimenopause can be really, really incredibly damaging to your confidence and just not coping with life how you used to.
It sounds like a bit of a nightmare, I'll be honest with you, from what I'm hearing.
It can be. You know. But, yeah, this is where, I mean, you know, people have to do what's right for them. But, I mean, I am an advocate for HRT. I mean, for me, I think it's saved my sanity. And I certainly see with my PT clients the huge benefits, you know, women coming in going, oh, my God, I wish I had done that a year ago. And this is what I mean. I think women do just struggle on going, oh, you know, it will pass. But perimenopause, you know, can last 4, 5, 6 years. You know, that's a long time to just be coping with life. You know, I think if it was a 6 month period, you could kind of go, oh, okay, well, this is a bit of a blip. But, you know, it can go on. Menopause itself, basically, in effect, is when you haven't had a period for a year. And the build up to that is generally about your mid 40s. And then menopause itself generally happens in the UK at around the age of 51.
Right. When you mentioned about the car park thing, I was actually thinking there's people that are quite young that do that. I mean, you know, I would do that in my 20s and 30s, I'll be honest with you. it was a nice, mild example, though, I think.
Yes.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Was you saying something? You were going to say something else?
No, that's it. So menopause, yeah, based generally in the UK is 51 is the age, is roughly the age that it's done, and then you're post-menopause.
Brilliant.
And if you, I mean, again, looking at that, Gavin, you know, if you think about the fact that women generally start menopause around their mid-40s, menopause itself is 51, and then after that you're post-menopause, what that means is that a woman spends a third of her life in menopause. So it's an important, you know, that's 51% of the population spending a third of their life in menopause, and that's a really important area, therefore, to be addressed. You know, what options are available to me? What's going on for me? What do I identify with? And how can I help myself get the best out of these years?
No, of course, absolutely. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
Radio. UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, Edwina, thanks for that insight into perimenopause, the menopause. Very interesting. I didn't know how much of an impact it can have as well. And it sounds like, and I know there can be combinations from what I hear of the symptoms. You mentioned sleep. What habits can help to improve sleep? Because you were mentioning that with the menopause, perimenopause, that it can affect sleep, basically. It's a huge issue, isn't it, sleep? Because when you don't sleep properly, the next day, it really puts you off. You're like in a different zone.
Oh, totally. And I don't know about you. I mean, I can get by with maybe one night of rough sleep, potentially two at a push. But, you know, anything beyond that, there's no area of your life that gets away unscathed from lack of sleep. I mean, it's very difficult. And so if you're going, you know, weeks with broken sleep and waking up because of hot flushes, or you can't get off to sleep because of anxiety, again, all related to declining estrogen and progesterone, the brain really struggles to regulate sleep without estrogen and progesterone as well. So, you know, we don't go into that deep, deep sleep, where the brain flushes out toxins and then we wake up feeling refreshed. And if you're going weeks without that, then again, we get into that cycle of waking up tired and just not, you know, kind of being in a bit of a brain fog getting through our day. Again, it's that thing of not coping with stress. So we raised our cortisol levels, which means, you know, our adrenals are up and pumping out cortisol. And then that's when we head for the sugary snacks and the, you know, the alcohol to be able to try and wind down. And then you're not going to sleep as well because you're trying to process all the sugar. And then it just, you know, it's just is cyclical. So sleep is absolutely imperative. And having, you know, good sleep hygiene, I mean, I have to catch myself out with this every now and then. I mean, I think we can all be, we're all guilty of too much screen time. And I'm now at the point where I have got to leave my phone out of my bedroom. I mean, I cannot seem, it's such a drug. I cannot.
So addictive. It's so addictive, isn't it?
Terrible. So, I've got to leave it out of my room because otherwise I will be lying in bed on my screen at 10:30, literally like not able to get off this phone. So good sleep hygiene, so no screen time. Trying not to eat too late at night, certainly not loads of sugary snacks, trying to keep yourself well hydrated, trying to go to bed at the same time every night, and that will give you and magnesium. Magnesium's great for relaxing. It turns on your parasympathetic nervous system, which is going to just relax you and activate your melatonin, which is your sleep-wake hormone, and, give you a much better chance of getting some rest. So magnesium's key as well. But, yeah, having a good sort of sleep hygiene routine helps enormously, particularly in perimenopause.
Can exercise help with sleep as well, depending when you do exercise? Because I know in some cases you might do exercise and it kind of keeps you a little bit going, it like keeps you a bit awake. But if you do it at the right time of the day,
yeah,
then by the time you get to the night time, you feel tired. Is that something that can help, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you're right. Like if I exercise too late, it kind of has the opposite effect. But yeah, if I do exercise, and again, because I think it's so good at helping to manage stress as well. So what you're doing is you've just got a much calmer body, and then you're sort of, you're more likely to sleep much better. So definitely exercise.
Brilliant. What should women be eating in their perimenopause and menopause years to support their health?
So, there's lots they can be doing. So, you know, talking about the declining, you know, estrogen and progesterone, that's obviously nothing, we can't do anything about that unless we choose to go on HRT, which I said can help. But then, you know, our diet can have such an enormous, massive impact. So, you know, really it's not about having no sugar, but the sugar's just got to really come down a lot. It's just a lot for our body to process. It's toxic and it's hard on our gut. It's hard on our digestive system. So, you know, looking to foods, we're looking at complex carbs. So we're looking at things like rye bread, sweet potato, oats, quinoa, all of these complex carbs are going to keep our blood sugars nice and steady so that we don't get those kind of like spikes. Because when you eat sugar, you get these insulin spikes and then crashes, which have you craving more sugar. So we want to have like nice complex carbs that keep your blood sugars nice and steady. They give you energy for longer periods of time. We're looking at having protein. So, you know, fish, chicken, eggs, all those things. Protein basically keeps you full for longer. And it also goes to support building our muscle mass, which is really important, again, in perimenopause. And then getting in some omega-3s, so good fats. And this is imperative for our brain health. So salmon, mackerel, tuna, sardines. It's a Mediterranean diet, really. It's, lots of complex carbs and proteins and fats, and then good fibre, which you'll get through the complex carbs. So that helps our digestive system and helps the food move through our system a lot more efficiently. And then if you can have sort of the 80-20 rule, if you can kind of eat 80% in that way and then save the 20 for, you know, if you want to have a share a bottle of wine on the weekend or, you know, whatever the case is, that's fine. But that's going to help you to... All of these foods are going to help to regulate your mood. They're going to help you sleep better. It's going to stop the sugar cravings. You're going to be able to maintain your weight. You're going to be able to prevent lots of illnesses that, you know, can creep up when we have too much weight on us. You know, the type 2 diabetes, the heart disease, all those nasties we want to keep away. These type of foods are going to go a long way towards supporting your health.
Can fasting help at all?
Yeah, fasting can definitely help give the digestive system a break. And I think it's very personal. You know, again, I've had clients that have come in and done great things with fasting, and I've had other clients that really don't like it. And if anything, I'm a big believer you've got to find what works for you, because what you don't want to do is fast and then hate it and then go back and put on more weight. So I think a good way to start with fasting is to, you know, not go too extreme. It is a great opportunity to realign your body and your hormones and to give your digestive system a break. And looking at, say, stopping at, like you could stop eating at, say, 7 o'clock in the evening, and then you could start again at 9 o'clock the next morning. So that gives your body 14 hours of, you know, break, and, you know, most of that's spent sleeping, and that's manageable. And I think that's, if fasting is something that you wanted to start, I think that's a good place to start. And then you may find that you can push it further. So you stop eating at 7 and then you start eating at 12 or 1 and you start to sort of go to the 16-hour mark.
I remember talking to a dietitian about fasting and made some good points. Basically, with fasting, it's got to fit in with your lifestyle. Otherwise, you're just not going to continue it, you know.
No.
Like, for example, I do like the 16-8 rule.
Yeah.
So I've got like a 16 hours of fasting and 8-hour window where I'll eat food. And sometimes I'll close it. Sometimes it'll be an 18-6, ratio. Weekends, I might let myself go on a Saturday or Sunday. But again, it's altering it to your lifestyle. That's my understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like what works. And I think, again, with my clients, it's also individual. You know, we are all going through, you know, perimenopause or menopause, depending on where you are, and it's about finding what works for you. But this way of eating with the complex carbs, the protein, good fats, and the fiber, finding how you get meals with that in your day, and whether that's through, you know, fasting, or you don't like fasting, you'd rather have the, you know, the traditional way of eating, that's fine. But it's what works, what's sustainable, what keeps you energized, what stops you feeling deprived. All of those things are really important as well. Because women, I think, as well, in particular, it's all for us, particularly my generation of women that sort of grew up in the 80s and 90s diet culture. It was all about restriction. It was all about less than. It was all about being smaller and less than. And that was really the narrative that came through. And I just can't stand that. I bore that narrative. And so that's why I really push away from any sort of diet culture. And I really belong just having good foods that are going to give you good nutrient dense quality macronutrients, micronutrients, support you through your menopause years, give you energy. You can sustain it, make great recipes, and it's something you can carry on forever.
I'm guessing excessive alcohol or smoking is a bit of a no-no.
Funnily enough, actually, do you know, I suppose I've got a couple of clients that might vape. I don't know that I know any
Vapes, vapes, I don't know. It's a bit of an open category of vaping, isn't it? I don't know anything about it. I've never vaped before. I know people that do it, and maybe they're trying to do it to come off smoking or whatever it might be. I suppose I, when I mention smoking, I mean like actual cigarettes and, you know, the old school.
I think they've all gone to vaping. And then it's like, I mean, I don't know anything. I assume one minute I heard vaping was okay, and then now I'm heard I know vaping is the equivalent of smoking 16 million cigarettes. So
yeah, I've heard some mixed views as well, yeah. You know, but I suppose with the menopause, perimenopause, smoking, or as I said, excessive drinking. Because you mentioned drinking in portion, you know, as in small portions. I'm making a bigger guess here. I have no idea, but I'm guessing it won't affect the person so much as obviously if you're doing, you know, excessive amounts of alcohol drinking.
Yeah, and I think, you know, having a glass of wine or whatever, a drink on the weekend is totally fine. But, I mean, it's just it's the way we process sugar now, and it's just it's very different to how it happened a few years ago. And it's, you know, alcohol, you know, having a drink every now and then is absolutely fine. But, it, you know, in a lot of respects, it's also, you could say, it's kind of like liquid sugar. And, you know, women are up against, you know, I talk about rather talking about it than it being about weight loss. It's more about how can you hormonally balance or eat for your hormonal health, because we've got lots of things going on like our hunger hormones, which are called ghrelin and leptin. And ghrelin like tells us when we're hungry, and leptin tells us when we're full. And basically what happens is the more leptin's made in our fat cells, and the more leptin we have on us, the more fat cells we have on us, the more leptin we have on us. And leptin sends signals to our brain telling us when we're full. But what happens is if we have a lot of fat on us, the brain is getting these signals all the time. And so then it starts to dial down these signals. And so then what it does is it goes, or the brain's like, oh, you must be hungry. So it starts dialing up our hunger signals. And so what it is, we might have a lot of weight on us, but we're getting signals that we're hungry all the time. And then we're not having the off switch because there's a dysregulation between the leptin and the ghrelin. So these are things that women are having to manage that you didn't necessarily have to manage when you weren't in perimenopause. So it's thinking about things like leptin resistance, insulin resistance. It's just where our bodies just aren't as, I guess, efficient as they were a few years ago. But they can be efficient if we eat a good diet and we manage our sugar intake. And unfortunately, with our sugar intake, that's also managing our alcohol intake. So, you know, our body is incredibly forgiving if you feed it good things and you can turn things around quickly. But, you know, I do say what worked 5 years ago doesn't work as efficiently today. And also over and above menopause, Gavin, it's just the fact we've got an aging body. I mean, the body's just, it's getting older.
Yeah, yeah. It's an unfortunate, it's wearing down. It's not going to be the same as it was, like, you know, in our 20s, for example, you know. But you, I suppose, as you've mentioned, a good number of things. And to be fair, what you've mentioned actually, taking us away from menopause and perimenopause, generally speaking, is going to help you your healthy lifestyle, you know, whether you're a man or a woman. Do you know what I mean?
Especially. Yeah, I mean, completely. I mean, I call it, you know, you call it the menopause diet, whatever you want to call it. But it's like, it's just really, it's just, yeah, really how men and women should be eating to get the best out of these years as well. You know, I mean, the thing is that you can be the wealthiest person in the world, but at the moment you've got a health issue, it's, you know, it takes everything away. I mean, your health is your wealth, and we've only got one body.
Yep.
And with a few changes, you know, it, as I said, it's very forgiving, and you can make some pretty significant changes. And I know, you know, I mean, it's habit and it's lifestyle, and it can be quite daunting. But once you start to make those changes, you'll start to reap the rewards quite quickly. You'll see that you will sleep better. You'll see that you will drop the weight. You'll see that your digestion will improve. Your skin will improve. Your energy will improve. You know, you'll feel better because you're not feeling as heavy within yourself. You know, there's only benefits to be gained.
100%, absolutely. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So, Edwina, exercise in the mid-stage of life, what would you suggest?
Well, I'm a bit biased, but I would definitely say strength training. I feel like I got in early on this train. But, yeah, no, strength training, because I do sound like doom and gloom, but I guess what I use is I'm giving you the facts and I'm saying, but this is what you can do about it. So basically as we age, we're losing muscle mass, we're losing bone density, and in perimenopause, because of the loss of estrogen and declining hormones, that kind of speeds up. But we can do a lot about strengthening our muscles and our bone density through weight training. And it doesn't have to be, you know, lifting every day, but if you could get in, you know, 2 to 3 weight training sessions for 45 minutes a week, that would go a long way towards at least maintaining the muscle mass you've got now and hopefully building on it a bit more as well. So, yeah, I'm a big advocate of strength training because I think there's a lot to be had. And the thing is also, you know, osteoporosis is a real concern, you know, that our weakening bones and muscle mass as we get older is the cause for a lot of fractures. And again, it's like this is the opportunity now in your 40s to like really take the bull by the horns and strengthen your body so that you are, it's like you're future-proofing yourself essentially because, you know, falling estrogen levels means that we are at increased risk of osteoporosis and because estrogen plays a vital role in the turnover of bone and that obviously decreases in perimenopause. So, yeah, strength training is super important. And then on the back of that as well is eating the protein because so protein supports our muscle mass.
I know the body, well, I read this years ago, the skeletal frame starts to actually break down from 30 onwards. Mm. So, yeah, and so I'm thinking now from what you've mentioned, with the menopause and perimenopause, that increases the likelihood of that as well. Is that right? Does that kind of, right? Okay.
And also the thing is that there isn't actually any, yeah, very much so. So, and the thing is that there isn't any osteoporosis preventative screening. So in actual fact, women don't tend to know that they've actually got osteoporosis, so in a sense, until it's too late, until they've had a fracture or broken a bone.
Oh, no.
And so you can't, so now is really the time when we need to be strengthening those bones, building our muscle mass, eating as much calcium as we can and taking vitamin D so we can absorb the calcium. Yeah, there's lots of things we can be doing. Yeah, once you're doing them regularly, it probably all sounds quite overwhelming now listening to it all at once, but once you have a plan in place, it's not that hard, but it's super important that we do prevent. You know, prevention is better than cure, obviously.
Absolutely, no, 100%. Go on.
I was just going to say, I mean, any movement is better than no movement. I mean, yes, I'm an advocate of strength training, but, you know, if that's not your thing, any movement is better than no movement. And if that's a 20-minute walk a day, then that's absolutely better than nothing. But certainly finding something that you enjoy and that you can stick to, I'd probably say that's the number one rule. And then next would be, and if it can be strength training, great.
And even if someone sets up a little place in their house or flat or wherever it might be, just a little few little weights, do a bit during the day, or, you know, each day or every other day or whatever it is, I'm sure that must have some benefits as well.
Oh, totally. I mean, we're so, there's so much available to us now. You know, it's a case of you can do a home workout, you can go to a gym, you can go to a private studio, you can, you know, there's boot camps in parks. I mean, there's so much. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's kind of like no excuse to not find something that you don't enjoy because, I mean, there is just so much choice out there. And it can be, I mean, I've got to believe that everyone can find 20 minutes in their day. And the thing is also, as I will say to clients, everyone has their day one. Everyone has their day one. And, you know, people go into gyms and feel like everyone knows what they're doing. But I can assure you, I've been going to gyms for years and years and years. And, yeah, there's plenty of people that, I mean, no one cares. Like, everyone's just doing their own thing. So that's definitely my message to people, that are feeling nervous about going to gyms or getting out there and doing something, like, I promise you, no one's looking because everyone's just obsessed with themselves.
No, that's absolutely fair enough. Midlife is a time of, you know, children growing up, leaving, aging parents, money concerns, an aging body, long-term marriages may be under strain. There can be a lot of pressure as well as huge hormonal shifts with menopause. It brings for a woman, I mean, aside from food and exercise, how else can women support themselves during that time?
I think the food and the movement goes a long way. And then I think it's about learning to find a place that you can get some calm and some quiet. And I think, you know, a lot of this can sort of be maybe not as much anymore, but, you know, written off as woo-woo or whatever. But, learning to meditate or doing journaling where you can get some space and some separation from your thoughts, and you can get, you know, some perspective about what's going on with your day, learning some breathing techniques so that when you're under stress you can learn skills to calm down your nervous system and not be so reactive. Just learn to listen to your body, learning to be present, you know, just learning some of those skills and giving yourself some of those skills that really support your needs and what you need. And I think that goes a long way as well. So it's very much the nutrition and the movement, but also that connecting with yourself, that spiritual side that's really important, and finding that calm and that space, because, you know, there is a lot of there's a lot that comes up in perimenopause, but between the hormone replacement therapy, looking at your nutrition and movement, you can do a lot to manage that. Like, not only management, but actually thrive. But also, it's like they call it the change for the reason. And this is a real opportunity in your life to just take some space and work out what you want for yourself. Because, you know, back in our early 20s, it was all about kids and marriages and mortgages and careers and moving and making money and building a life and stuff. And I think in your 40s and 50s, it's now we've done a lot of that. And you can have a real time to sort of reflect and work out on what you want for your life and how you want to move forward. And that involves giving yourself some space and slowing down and some self-compassion and self-kindness as well, just not being so hard on ourselves.
Absolutely. I've done quite a few shows, and the number of times journaling comes up and breathing, they're two things that come up, but especially journaling. Writing things down, keeping a private journal, obviously, you know, keep it away from everyone. Somewhere where you can share your own private thoughts, put it on paper. It's quite surprising how much you kind of release from yourself from just writing things down. And do you know what I mean? It just kind of letting it all go. You know, do you have a journal yourself? Do you find that, or?
I have loads of journals. No.
Here we go, everyone. Let's have a little, let's pry into Edwina. So what was the last thing you put in there? No, I'm just joking. Anyway, so.
Burned. No, and again, I say to clients, I have bought so many journals and stuff in the past for clients, Gavin, because it's such a place, as I said, it's not a place for perfectionism or grammar or any, it's like literally you download, you can start off with, I have just had the worst day or whatever it is. It's your own private space to completely dump everything. And I think personally, journaling, I think, allows you to get allows you to separate from your thoughts and to really step back from a situation and get some clarity about what's going on in your life, and it creates self-awareness as well, and it gives you perspective. And I mean, I find that when I write, and I do write at the end of every day, I just I just have more space to think. It's just it's out, and when it's out, it's released. And then by releasing it, it releases me. And so I find enormous power in journaling and writing, and I think it can be really, really therapeutic.
That's brilliant. I think it's a fantastic thing. If a woman is feeling overwhelmed and does not know where to start in terms of looking after her health, what are three things she can do to start doing today to help her feel more in control?
I would say the first thing I would say, if she's feeling overwhelmed, and a first place to start would be really to have a look at just sugar. Sugar's just a real, that's just something that's within your control that, you know, it creates a lot of inflammation in your body. It obviously, you know, adds with weight, disrupts sleep because it upsets your digestion. It's just, you know, it's just not great, sugar. So if you can't, and I'm not saying eliminate it on day one, particularly if you're an overwhelm, but certainly look at where you can start to get cut down. Number two, I would be looking at movement. So, you know, how can I get some movement into my day? And number three, in all honesty, I would be looking at journaling. I'd be looking, and if you don't know where to start with journaling, you literally just go and buy yourself a journal book from Wilco for a pound and look online. There's journal prompts. And that, you know, you give journaling just a go for 5 or 10 minutes a day for a week, and I think you would be very surprised at how much benefit. And I think all three of those things are completely free, you know, cutting back on sugar, going out for a walk, and okay, a pound for the journal, you know, or a piece of paper at home. But yeah, they're those three things you can start straight away.
I think that's fantastic. Are there any upsides to the perimenopause or menopause?
I think once you get a handle on it, and again, it's just, you know, it's if you're fighting it and thinking, oh, this is just a phase and everything will be fine and da-da-da-da, it's like it makes it much harder. But I think if you just accept where you are, you look at what your options are. So, you know, there is, as I said, HRT through your GP, or and looking to know what changes you can make through your diet and getting some movement in. Once you get that happening, I think it can be a really exciting time. I think it's like, as I said, like, yeah, they call it the change for a reason, and it's like this is a time to make a real gear change in your life. You know, what do you want for yourself? How do you want your life to look? How do you want to behave? What is it you need? What changes can you make? Your kids are generally a bit older now. We've been around for a while, and I think it's taking a look at ourselves and going, right, what do I want for this next part of my life, and how am I going to make that happen? And I think that can be hugely exciting, really, really exciting. So that's why, you know, I really want to empower women to be in their best health so that then they can go and do that, do what they want to do, go and live their best lives. It's a hugely exciting time.
Brilliant. I think it's, yeah, absolutely. You're starting again, aren't you? You're kind of starting life again in a way, just the next chapter, basically.
Yeah, starting life and potentially also starting life how you want it, because I think quite often when we come out of school and we're all sort of pumped out of school and pumped out of university, we quite often fall into things, and we fall into careers and quite often fall into marriages, and then life goes on, and that's fine, and lots of that is absolutely wonderful, and lots of that's really hard, and that's just the way life is. But this is a time when actually now you can be proactively making decisions about how you want your life to look. You know, you've been around for a while now, and I think, you know, life is short, and I think if you can be in good physical health, then I think anything is possible at this time. Absolutely.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because with keeping a good exercise regime, dieting regime, it improves mental well-being on the whole. So, yeah. You know, and you look at things more positively as well, I think.
Yeah, I think just being in good physical health and good mental health, then nothing's really stopping you from doing whatever it is you want to do. You might, I think, well, like myself, you know, becoming a personal trainer in my early 40s, you know, having that complete career change and working for myself. You know, and you've also got a skill set. I mean, it's interesting. It's like I don't know that I would have had the confidence to do what I do now back in my early 20s, but I've got the confidence and also, I guess, the wisdom of my years in addition to your studies, and I think those three will go together really well. So I think anything's possible in your – I kind of think more's possible, actually. More is – yeah, absolutely. Like no limits.
Absolutely, no limits. Where can people find you if they want to, you know, get some advice or they want to use some of your services? Are you on social media? Or?
Yes, so my social media is Edwina Jenner Coaching on Instagram, and on Facebook I'm Edwina Jenner Mindset Coach.
Brilliant. Is there anywhere else they can find you? Have you got a website, anything like that?
Yeah, I do. EdwinaJenner.com.
Brilliant. Excellent. Thank you for your time today, Edwina. It's been brilliant.
Thank you, Gavin. Thanks so much.
And thank you to our listeners. You know you can find me at GavinJ417 on Instagram. Until next time, take care.